The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today's episode of The Overwhelmed Brain is brought to you by GetOutOfTheMess.com. Contact Asha, your independent Legal Shield associate, and ask her if these highly affordable legal services are right for you. 678-355-8777. Are you annoyed by affirmations? Are you tired of that same old, rehashed personal growth advice that all seems to boil down to, think positively and all your problems will go away? If affirmations feel like lies and positive thinking feels like denial, then I want you to get ready. The Overwhelmed Brain is here to help you create the life you want now. Hello and welcome to The Overwhelmed Brain. My name is Paul Coliani. I'm a personal empowerment coach, and this is the show where I help you tackle life's toughest challenges. I want to help you increase your emotional intelligence, strengthen your self-worth and self-esteem, and empower you so that you can make decisions that are right for you. Everything I talk about on this show is my personal opinion and is meant for informational and educational purposes only. Always consult a medical or psychological professional before making any changes that could affect your physical or mental health. Okay, it's one of those days. I've recorded this intro 4 times. and I try to go through a show without editing, but it never happens. So this is the 4th intro recording. You'd never know if I didn't tell you. But sometimes I'll just say, hello, this is Paul Coliani. I'm an empowerment coach. And I'll miss a word instead of a personal empowerment coach. Or I'll say the word empowerment instead of empowerment. And maybe you didn't catch that, but I catch these little things. I catch these subtle nuances in the words that I say, and I listen to it in my head as I say these words, and I think, I don't sound very intelligent. I got to re-record that. I don't know if you go through this, but, you know, I record myself a lot. I do this show a lot. It's once a week, and it's not just an hour of recording. It's several hours of recording that get condensed into a segmented show. First segment, second segment, third segment. And so it's edited. I try not to edit too much. I don't want to edit too much because editing takes time. But at the same time, there are things that I've said when I re-listen to the show that are the complete opposite of what I would normally say. Or what I wanted to say, just like now, what I would normally say as opposed to what I wanted to say. I've said things as I've monitored the recording that were bad advice. Not that I intended to give that advice, but there are some things that I might say that will sound like what you need to do or what you might want to do is say this to the person. Instead of saying what you might not want to do is say this to the person. And I've caught myself doing that. So it's one of those things where you have one thought in mind, but you say something else that's not in alignment with that thought. I don't know if you've ever done this. I think we all have. I think we've all done this, where we have this intention that we want to say something and we convey it to someone else. And when it comes out of our mouth, it's almost as if we heard the right thing, but they heard something else. And this has happened to me so many times in my previous relationships and my current relationships with anyone that I know. I'll say something and they'll say, what? Why would you say that? Or what you just said doesn't make any sense. Or they'll repeat it back to me and I'll say, I didn't say that. and then we might have an argument or we might have a discussion that talks about what I just said, or at least helps to convey my original intention of what I wanted to say. So this is just a little side note. I think it's important to understand that unless you're one of these amazingly brilliant people that knows how to articulate every single thought in their head verbally, If you know how to express it so well that your thoughts are conveyed clearly, then you are a special person. You are one of those people that can do this where the rest of us, or at least I can speak for myself, might have trouble every now and then. This is why it's so important for me to, when I record a show like this, to listen to it before it goes into production, before it gets completed, so that I know that I'm conveying the right message. And this is also one of the reasons, and this is a fact about the overwhelmed brain you probably don't know about, is it's also one of the reasons I do my own editing. I listen to this stuff. I don't have anyone else listen to it and interpret what I'm saying, because it might be something that I said that I didn't mean. And the last thing I want is something to go out there that I didn't mean and have it affect someone in a negative way. Because like I've said, I've said things that were the complete opposite of what I meant. And I listen again and I think, what? That's wrong. I need to change that right away. Fortunately, it doesn't happen too often. I've done this for almost 5 years now. So I have learned to be expressive while streaming thought at the same time, because I don't use very many notes. A lot of this just comes out of my head, and that information then gets translated through my thoughts, through my intentions, out to the world, into your ears. So I think it's vital for me to just be very careful how I word things so that there are no misunderstandings and mistranslations. Because some of the stuff we talk about, it can be very sensitive. I mean, I've had episodes on suicide. I mean, panic attacks and anxiety and depression, all of these things can be very sensitive issues. So I'm kind of talking about myself right now, but I think there's a lesson in here for everyone, for you, that the way we speak, how we speak, what we say doesn't always match the intentions behind what we're thinking. Here's a great example. My client told me the other day that a while back he was doing something for his partner, and he had good intentions. It was loving. It was kind. And his partner saw something wrong with what he was doing. I won't say what that was, but what he was doing was a kind gesture, and his partner found something wrong with it. And it threw him for a loop. He didn't understand what to do with this information because his partner is finding something wrong with what he's doing, yet his intention was to be kind and nice and show love. And his partner did not see it that way. Or if his partner did, then it didn't last long because that person found something else wrong with what he was doing. So it can be difficult when you have good intentions to put yourself into the world and express yourself, and it gets misunderstood, or you even say it wrong. You even say it in a way that you didn't mean it. And when that happens, it's even harder to, I don't want to say backpedal, but do damage control to get out of what just happened. You know, I think a lot of us do that. I think a lot of us have good intentions, just like when I'm driving the speed limit, I put my cruise control on. I have good intentions to follow the law. But when there's a speed limit sign up ahead that is 10 miles lower and I miss it, and my cruise control is still set at that 10 miles higher point, which was the previous speed, and then a cop pulls me over, I can't convince the cop that I had good intentions. I can't convince the cop that I was following the law to the letter. I was following the law to the utmost way I could follow the law. I set it on the exact speed, yet the speed changed. I blinked, and the sign was there to change my speed to a lower speed, and I missed it. So here I am breaking the law, and I had no idea I was doing it. How many times in our life have we done something that we didn't even know we were doing? How do you get out of that? What kind of damage control? Sometimes you just get in trouble. I got a ticket that day. And I said, you know, my intention was to follow the rule of the law. I didn't see the sign. I don't know. And he said, it didn't matter. You know, ignorance. You can't claim ignorance. You got to know the law. And I actually have some personal beef with that. But I do take responsibility for that. And okay, I pay it. Life goes on. And now I'm more aware. I look for the signs and make sure I'm doing everything I'm supposed to do. But how often in relationships do we say something that we don't mean or that we thought we meant and it came out wrong? This is why I want my Amazon Echo to record everything. I know everyone's against this. They're like, privacy, privacy. But I want my recording device on all the time so I can say, hey, Amazon Echo, I won't say the real name so yours doesn't activate if you have one. Will you play back the last 35 seconds of our conversation? I would love that. That would be great. Not because I want to be right, but because I want to replay it so that I understand what happened. I just want to know what happened. That way I can make sure it doesn't happen again, or at least do my best to make sure it doesn't happen again. I mean, it's like Star Trek, right? Can you replay the conversation I had and when we were talking about 5 minutes in where I mentioned, you know, I like eggplant. And then in Star Trek, you can do that. It's easy. Apparently, there's no privacy issues in Star Trek, so I don't mind that. Of course, I'm on the air all the time, so my personal life is out there, so maybe I just don't care as much as other people. But anyway, where am I going with all this? Where I'm going is that I think we need to be a little humble when we talk to people, in the sense where somebody says, what? Why would you say that? That's mean. That's not loving. That's, you know, whatever they think. And our intention was loving. Our intention was to be respectful. Our intention was to be honest. And they say, wow, that's really cruel for you to say that. You'll say something like that. For us to step back, be a little humble, and think, wow, whatever I just said must have come out wrong. And when you do that, what happens is you accept responsibility for the communication. And when you accept responsibility for the communication, guess what? You have more control to change things in your life. Ah, how does that happen? So this is what's called one of the presuppositions in NLP. And that is the meaning of communication is the response that you get. So let me repeat that if you've never heard it. The meaning of communication is the response that you get. Now, what this means is that if you presuppose that someone's interpretation or understanding or misunderstanding of what you're communicating is your responsibility. I mean, it's your responsibility to get them to understand what you're meaning, what you're saying. Then you get to always be in charge of how your life turns out. And presupposing just means I am going to assume that when this person understands, I got the message across clearly. I'm also going to assume that when this person misunderstands, that it was my inability to communicate it clearly enough. Now, this is a pretty deep topic because I know you've probably heard communication is 50-50. I've also heard communication is 100-100. You're responsible for 100% of it and they're responsible for 100% of it. And I don't disagree with either one of those, but I also agree with adopting the philosophy that communication is my responsibility. So that if you misunderstand something, then it was my, for lack of a better term, fault. It was my responsibility to word it in a way or convey the message in a way so that you do understand it, which is why sometimes you'll hear me repeat things in a different way. I might tell you something one way and then repeat it in another way because half the people that are listening will understand it the first time and the other half will hopefully understand it the second time. That doesn't mean you can do this in normal conversation, but maybe in speaking in groups you can. But in normal conversation, if you choose to adopt this philosophy, you're going to have, and this is my presupposition, my assumption about you, you're going to have a better life. You're going to release yourself of your dependencies on other people in different ways. And what I mean by that is, let's just say you and I were together in a coffee shop. And I said, I really want some coffee. Hey, when you're up there and you get yourself a coffee, I'm thirsty too. Let's just say I conveyed it that way. my message might be, hey, would you get me a cup of coffee? And I didn't even tell you who's going to pay for it. I just said, hey, when you're up there, I'm thirsty too. So when you're getting yourself coffee, you know, think of me. So this is my message to you. And if you're like me, you'll probably interpret that as, okay, I'll get you a cup of coffee. But some other people might not interpret it that way at all. They might think, oh yeah, I'm getting coffee and I'm thinking of Paul. But I'm not going to get him a cup of coffee because, you know, he didn't ask. He didn't ask. If he asked for one, I would get one. But I can't guess what's on his mind. I'm not going to be a mind reader. So he would have asked for one. So I just think maybe he's given up caffeine. Maybe he doesn't want coffee and he just wants me to think. I mean, all kinds of interpretations there. But let's just say that you come back from the register with your coffee and not mine. And I say, hey, where's my coffee? And you look at me and you go, what are you talking about? You didn't ask for coffee. I said, you know, when you're up there, you know, getting your coffee, think of me. I'm thirsty too. I thought you'd get what I was saying. And you might say, well, why didn't you just ask for coffee? I would have gotten it for you. So on and on and on and on. And what is happening here is that I am getting irritated with you. I probably wouldn't, but let's just say that this was the scenario. I got irritated with you because you didn't get me a coffee and it would have been easy for you to get it. And of course, I would have paid you back and all that other stuff. But that's all in my head. That's all in my intention. Everything that you can't see or hear or read from me. All you heard is the words. And it's vital for me to say the words that have meaning to you. Because these words could have meaning to me as a former people pleaser. If somebody said, oh, I'm so thirsty, my people pleasing is going to kick in and I'm going to be like, what do you want to drink? I'm going to the kitchen. What can I get you? I just want to help you. I just want to make you happy. Whereas someone else who maybe didn't grow up with that people pleasing, that people pleasing dysfunction or ability, whatever you want to call it, might hear I'm thirsty and think, oh, he's thirsty. Well, when he's ready, he'll probably get up and get something to drink because he's able to do that. Because I was raised like that. I was raised that if I said I'm thirsty, my mom said, great, when you're ready, go get something to drink. And that was just my upbringing. It really has to do with our conditioning, our upbringing, our programming of how we interpret things, of what things mean to us. So when I say, can you get me a cup of coffee? You might say, yes, I can, but not do it. And if you don't do it, I might think, wow, that's kind of sarcastic. And you might say, I wasn't trying to be sarcastic. I didn't know you were asking for me to get you one. I just thought that you were asking if I had the ability to get you one. So I know that's a stretch. That's a stretch of an example. But how many times does this happen in communication? It happens all the time. There's misinterpretations. This is why I love the presupposition in NLP that says the meaning of communication is the response that you get. That way, when I get a response that is opposite of what I was trying to get or in conflict of what I was trying to get, or if they misunderstand what I was trying to say in some way, then I can come back to me instead of pointing the finger at them and say to me, ah, you did not convey it in a way that they understood it. This happens in relationships all the time. This is one of the main causes of relationship dysfunction or malfunction or arguments or contention. This is one of the biggest communication, in my belief, errors that we make, is that we point our finger at the other person and say, you are not listening. You have the inability to understand me. You are at fault for not understanding what I just said. When we do that, when we point the finger at the other person, we give our power to them, really. What we're doing is saying that I have no control over how you interpret my words. Therefore, I have no power. I know what you're thinking, but there are people that don't understand what I'm saying. There are people that never understand what I'm saying. There are people out there that I can't communicate with. Let's just say that's true. I still believe wholeheartedly that if you adopt that the meaning of communication is the response that you get, that you find a different way to convey the message. This even works with emotionally abusive people. if you know someone who's emotionally abusive, what they tend to do is respond in a way to make you feel bad, to make you feel bad about yourself, especially, or to make you feel guilty, or to make you feel responsible for all the problems in the relationship or whatever. They do their best to turn it around back on you to make you the bad guy. And so what the partner of an emotionally abusive person has to go through is that everything they do and say is wrong in their partner's eyes. And because of that, they lose a lot of power. They feel like, I can't do anything right. So even in these emotionally abusive situations, there's still another way to communicate with the abuser that keeps the power in your hands, keeps your power. And when you keep your power, you don't start to feel bad about yourself. You keep yourself getting sucked into an emotionally abusive cycle. So no matter who you talk to, when they feel like, let's just say that they're right all the time and you're the one with the problem, or even sometimes, you need to find a way to communicate or convey a message to them so that they understand it. And I'll use this quote that's often attributed to Einstein, but I've read that it's not really, it's nothing that he really said, but you know, the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again. Yet when you respond the same way over and over again, you'll get the same results. So what needs to happen is that you need to find a different way to respond. This is why when I'm with clients, I'm coaching, I'll often say, okay, how do you respond when he or she says this? And they'll tell me, and I ask, well, is this how you normally respond? And they'll say, well, of course, because I'm either defending myself, or I want them to know that I'm being truthful, or, you know, I have good intentions. There's always something that's very much a pattern. I am responding the same way each and every time. And with some people, if you do that, they'll behave the same way each and every time. So you'll never get past that dysfunctional cycle. However, I mean, you have to jump into your I'm my own therapist mode. The way I just communicated with this person didn't work. And they said something to make me feel bad. So whatever I said caused them to respond that way. And I'm not saying that's true. I'm not saying that it's your fault that it happened, but I'm saying let's presuppose that the meaning of my communication is up to me. And I need to convey it in a way that means something to them. Now, there are people that you can never get through to. I'm not saying that this is 100% effective all the time, but there are general circumstances with most people where you can take your power back, take that control of your life by remembering the meaning of communication as the response that you get. So that when you get a response that was not favorable, you can change the way to convey the message. Like my girlfriend on numerous times has said, "You're not listening." And I always have to correct her when this happens and say, no, I just don't understand. I am listening. I'll even repeat what she says. And she'll go, well, this is what I meant. And she'll get frustrated. And I get it. We get frustrated when someone doesn't understand us. But what would happen if you take your power back and go, okay, the way I conveyed it, that person didn't understand it. When we do that, we eliminate the accusations, we eliminate the blame, and we decide that what we're going to do, and this is the key part of all this, what we're going to do is meet them where they're at. So if my girlfriend says, Paul didn't understand, how can I meet him where he is? Well, the first thing she's going to say is, well, I don't know where he is. Then I would tell her, okay, let me understand it in small bites. Because that's what I need. I need smaller chunks. Because she'll like throw a barrage of information at me sometimes, and I don't know which part of it she wants me to comment on. But I will, you know, break it down into chunks. Okay, do you want me to comment on this part or that part? It's really a work in progress all the time. Communication is always a work in progress, where you're trying to understand what the other person wants from you, what they're trying to achieve. And when you convey information, how can you convey it in a way where it meets them where they are? So if you are communicating with someone who is a type A personality, a go-getter, always thinking, always doing, always busy, this person has schedules and organizers and knows what to do every hour of the day because they're just so darn pre-planned with everything, like my girlfriend. in most cases, then I probably need to communicate with her in a more systematic, bulletized way. If I'm very ambiguous or vague in my emotions, like, you know, I'm feeling upset by something we talked about the other night, she might think, well, what do we talk about? I've filed that. I've organized that. I don't know where you're going with this. I might have to be very specific with this very specific type person. So I will come back and say, when you said that you were going to turn off the TV and I said, I don't want you to turn off the TV. I'm just making this up. And you turned the TV off anyway. That upset me. Then she'll go, oh, that's what you're upset about? Or, you know, whatever. We'll have a conversation about it. And, you know, we can go somewhere with that. We can work with it. But I had to meet her where she is. I had to meet her personality type. I had to meet her brain wherever it is. It's not always easy. This is why there's something called pacing. When we return, I'm going to talk to you about pacing and leading and how vital that is in communication and how to make sure that the other person actually does understand what you're saying. Because if you're one of those people that just talks and talks and talks and talks and talks and hope the other person understands it, and you keep talking and you hope the other person understands it still, they may get lost in all that, on all those words. And when you do the pacing and leading part, also something I learned in NLP, which is a neuro-linguistic programming, in case I haven't mentioned it, it'll be very helpful in enhancing your communication skills and evolving your connection with people. This is where the good stuff lies. This is where the deeper ability to connect with someone, instead of just pointing the finger at them and saying, okay, you're the problem, you don't get it, I can't communicate with you, you just don't seem to understand. When we do that, we give our power away, we lose connection, we lose love, and then we feel that we're more alone in the universe because no one gets us. If you're in that kind of mindset, I want to help take you out of that mindset that no one gets you so that you can convey yourself in a way where someone does get you. Oh, I see what you mean now. That's a good feeling. I'll be right back. I'll talk about pacing and leading. Tell you about getoutofthemess.com. I haven't talked about them in a while, but Asha is an independent associate for Legal Shield. And if you've not heard of them, I highly recommend you go to getoutofthemess.com, which is her site that talks about their services and what they can do for you. But, you know, I've been on their service for about 2 years now. Asha's been on it for at least 8 years now. And I had to call them, I think, 3 or 4 months ago. And it was regarding questions about, it might have been taxes or something, taxes and creating an LLC. And so I created the Overwhelmed Brain LLC. And I didn't know too much about doing that and the tax implications and how to really work that in when tax time came along. So I called them up and I had a list of questions. And I talked to a real attorney in a law firm in my state of Georgia. And I tell you what, I got all my questions answered. And what did I pay? I'm only paying, we're on the $24, $25 a month family plan. That's all I've paid. You can't call an attorney for anything less than $200 or $300 an hour. And we spent a lot of time with this person and he answered all of our questions. And I didn't have to pay anything beyond what I pay every month. And so this is one of the huge advantages of the service that Asha is an associate for, is that you can get your legal questions answered and you can have them look over contracts and you can have them like fight speeding tickets for you and everything. There's a lot of services that they do for you that a lot of people don't take advantage of. I mean, I know people that said, oh, I got to call my lawyer. I got to pay him or her another $250 to talk with them. And then they're going to do some extra work and they're going to do some paperwork and that's going to cost me another $500. And I hear my friends talk like this. I was like, why don't you get this? Why don't you go to getoutofthemess.com and do this? It's $25 a month. So my girlfriend and I are paying that now. And we get to talk to an attorney anytime we want. We call them up, their service answers and says, what questions do you have? They contact the law firm and the law firm contacts us back. For what you get, it is so worth it. So I'm highly recommending this service, getoutofthemess.com. Call Asha. You can ask her any question about it. She's not an attorney. She tells you how it works. She uses the service herself, and she'll be truthful. She's not there to sell it to you. She's just there to let you know if it's the right service for you. Call her at 678-355-8777 or go to getoutofthemess.com. All right, welcome back. I'm going to give you one of my secret coaching techniques. Not really. I mean, this is just a communication technique that I use in coaching to help both of us communicate better. And this is so helpful in any relationship, friendship, work, every relationship you can think of. Any person that you communicate with at any time is pacing and leading. Now, the leading part, you know, you can leave this out. You don't necessarily have to lead, but I'll explain that in a moment. But let's talk about pacing. You know how someone's jogging along a path, and let's just say that you're a jogger too, and you could either jog past them, or you could jog behind them, or you could jog next to them. If you're friends, you want to chit-chat, you're going to pace their pace. You're going to pace their speed, pace their, maybe their tempo. You're going to be in the same rhythm as them. So when I think of pacing, that's what I think of, that jogging example. Hey, there's someone jogging. I'm going to jog right next to him, and then we're going to talk. Now we're on the same wavelength, so to speak. With communication, it's very similar, except there's, you know, obviously more involved here. But let's just say that we'll put ourselves in that coffee shop example again. And I wanted to convey something to you that might be a little challenging for you to understand because you don't have my experiences in life. Let's just say that you didn't have an alcoholic stepfather, and I wanted to tell you about my alcoholic stepfather and my upbringing. And so I would tell you the story. You know, when I was one, my father got divorced from my mom, and from that point on, my stepfather moved into the picture, and every day from that point on, all I can remember is when he was drunk. And those drunk episodes were so scary, and I spent time in my room, and my sister spent time in her room, hoping that we wouldn't hear him come up the stairs. Now, there are several ways you can imagine that happening. Some people go to the scary movie, like I'm crouched in a corner in the, you know, in a dark room, and the door is locked, and I'm hoping that the door handle doesn't jiggle. You know, some people might paint that picture, and other people might paint other pictures. But what I'm going to do is, when I'm telling you my story, I'm going to watch for your responses as I'm telling it. So as I say, you know, I grew up in this house in Massachusetts, I'm going to kind of watch your response, because if you give me a puzzled look, I'm going to say, oh, what is it? You look puzzled. And you might ask, oh, where is Massachusetts? So let's just say that you didn't know where Massachusetts was. What? Where Massachusetts? Where's that? And I would be like, oh, it's northeast United States. And you'd be like, oh, okay. Now I'm with you. So there's a vital component of our communication already. Now I'm with you. Now I get it. This is what you want. The part of pacing is, I get where you are. And so I'm going to get that acknowledgement. That's what I want. I want that acknowledgement. It doesn't have to be something they say. They don't even have to shake their head. I just want to notice if there's any divergence in the direction of misunderstanding. So part of pacing is looking for that divergence, looking for that, I'm not sure where you're going with that. Or I need more information there. You need to slow down. They're not saying these things necessarily. Some people might. But we're not all great at communicating stuff like that, because sometimes we listen to the whole thing, hoping to extrapolate information, trying to get the bits and pieces that we can try to understand so that we can make sense of what's being said. But if I'm talking to you and you kind of look at me funny and I go, oh, you know where Massachusetts is, right? At that point, I explain it and I've got acknowledgement. And now I'm still pacing your experience. It's a good way to look at it. I'm pacing the experience you're having in your head. Okay, so I stayed in Massachusetts for about 13 years, and then I moved to North Carolina to be with my dad. And then you might go, whoa, wait, your dad, he didn't live in Massachusetts. Well, he did for a while, but then he moved. Okay, so now I'm helping you understand and helping you pace along with me where I am. I mean, this sounds so common sense, but bear with me. There's more to this. So we establish that, and then I go back to my story. And what I'm doing the whole time is really watching your body language. And this is something that I think a lot of us have a hard time doing. We have a hard time watching someone else's body language because we're so wrapped up in our own stuff. I wonder if I'm conveying my message clearly. I wonder how I look. I wonder if my hair is okay. I wonder if I left the iron on. I wonder, and I keep wondering about all this stuff about myself, about my life. I wonder if they think I'm an idiot. There might be some anxiety that kicks in. All these things that we're so wrapped up in ourselves that we forget to observe the outside world. This is where outrospection, I think I made that up, outrospection really stands out. Instead of introspection, like what's going on in my world? What's going on in the outside world as I'm speaking this? And specifically in that person, are they understanding me? Not that I'm worried about them judging me or anything. I'm just trying to make sure that I'm pacing their experience in their head. Because their experience is that they're trying to follow along with what I'm saying. Okay, so I'm telling my story some more, and I get some head nods. There's some nonverbal physical gesture that will acknowledge that, oh, okay, they're following along. And then I say, you know, my dad worked for an airline for a while. And, you know, they tilt their head a little bit. Oh, he worked for, I think it was Eastern Airlines for a while, old 80s airline. And they said, oh, okay. So they keep going. So this whole thing is called pacing. You want to make sure that the person is with you. This takes some energy, believe it or not, to be observant of someone else's responses to your behavior. And some people are very good at this because they grew up in a household where you had to watch the other person's behavior. So those people are very good listeners. I feel like I'm a very good listener because I will continue to pay attention to you instead of worrying about, oh, I wonder if there's anything in my teeth. I wonder if they think badly of my hairstyle. I wonder if they think I'm too tall. I wonder if they don't like my voice. You know, all these little things that inner dialogue that goes on. But what I'm doing is paying attention to them and their responses. So to make sure that they understand me, because the meaning of my communication is the response I get from them. So the pacing process is helping me follow them, follow me. It's a beautiful thing when it happens. It really is. And if you can practice this in your relationships, you can avoid a lot of contention, a lot of strife that can occur. I know there are some relationships that have gone way beyond this, and it's like no matter what you do, no matter what you say, it doesn't matter because there's so much emotional baggage and too many emotional triggers. That's a different story. I'm talking about misunderstandings that come up, and you got to figure out, well, why does this always happen? Why do we always argue about this? Why does this always turn into this kind of conversation? One of the reasons might be because I have stuff to say, and I'm going to say it, and I'm right, and I want to tell you that I'm right, and I want to explain to you why I'm right. That's all inner instead of outer. Outer is where you watch the other person to make sure that they continue to follow along. Because you might have 14 points to make, but if they cannot get past point number one, the other 13 points aren't going to get past it either. I mean, this is what can happen, is that I've just made my point number one, which is I'm mad at you for telling your best friend what I said to you in private. That might be point number one. And you get to point number two, which is I'm not going to invite you to the birthday party, and I want you to show up differently, and I need you to be able to keep secrets. But they might still be stuck on that point number one. Like, you're mad at me for that? Why are you mad at me for that? I thought we talked about that. They're thinking all of this in their head. While you have a lot to say, but you may not have watched and paced their experience of you, their experience of trying to understand you, So they get lost at point number one, and then suddenly the rest of the conversation gets foggy. I know I'm relating to a lot of people right now. You can't get past the foundational points, then the rest of the conversation gets foggy. Now what? Now I'm kind of stuck at this point one, and I'm not hearing anything else you're saying because you didn't pace me. You didn't make sure I understood point one so we can get past point one to get to the next point. This can happen. This is the beauty of pacing, is that as you speak about what you need to speak about, as you convey the message, you watch for that body language. You watch for acknowledgement. You watch for understanding, or even ask for it. Does that make sense? Do you understand why I'm mad about that? And if the person says, yes, I totally get it. Great, you can go into the next point, or you can talk about that point. But if you don't stop to make sure they acknowledge what's happening, they may still be stuck in that, and it creates a fog-like state for the rest of the conversation. So this whole idea of pacing their experience of you, them trying to understand you, making sure they acknowledge each and everything that you say, even though it can slow down communication a little bit, but I tell you what, it makes communication more meaningful, and it makes communication more healthy and more helpful and deeper. It just helps you convey to each other in a way that there are very little misinterpretations, very little mistranslations. You can tell when somebody's following along, even when they don't like what they hear. You know, you were a real jerk for what you did. And they look down and they feel really bad, but it looks like they're acknowledging it. They understand it. They may not like it, but they understand it. So you get to the next point and you say your next thing, and you just make sure that they're following along. As opposed to, you know, look at the opposite. You're, for example, yelling at your kid, and you have 15 things to say to them. You showed up late. You said you wouldn't be late. You took the car. You told me you wouldn't take the car, depending on how old your kid is. And you're just saying all these things without even knowing if they have acknowledged any of what you said. In fact, they could have shut down the moment you opened your mouth. And so none of it's acknowledged, and you both go to bed upset. They go to bed thinking they hate you and they want to move out and all this stuff. And you go to bed thinking, well, I got my point across and I hope he learns his lesson to never do that again, without even knowing if they understood everything you were saying, because you weren't pacing their experience. Their experience could have been, geez, you know, I feel really bad about what I did. And your experience is, I'm really mad at you for what you did. I'm not going to acknowledge how bad you feel because I'm so mad at you. Suddenly, you're mismatched. You're not synchronized. And you may not even ask how they feel about what they did. But, I mean, that's a great first question, right? How do you feel about what you did? I feel really bad. I mean, I probably shouldn't have done it. Probably? No, I mean, I shouldn't have done it. I know it was wrong. Well, then why'd you do it? You know, you can start asking questions. You want to know what their experience is instead of being dominating. You want to know what's going on in their head. So this is all part of pacing someone else's experience, pacing what's going on inside their head so that you know you're understood. When you know you're understood, then it makes more sense to go into the next phase of this, which is leading. Leading is when you have developed enough rapport by pacing their experience so that they understand you, you understand them. You're taking responsibility for the communication because you may have to slow down your communication. You may have to say things in a different way. You have to relate to their experience of the world in order for them to understand you. And so when you get to that point and they say, yes, I get that. I get that. Now you have the ability to lead them in a new direction. So the pacing and leading often plays a role in coaching and therapy, in other areas where you want to help someone get out of a funky state, out of a bad feeling state. But, you know, leading has many functions, but that's typically what it's used for. When I learned it, it was about getting someone out of a bad state and into a better state. So, for example, with the person yelling at the kid. So you're yelling at your child and the child's got their head down and they don't know what to say. They just say nothing. But let's just say that you decided to, you know, take a step back, breathe. Okay, do you feel bad about what you did? Well, of course I feel bad. Now you're communicating a little bit. Great. Why did you do it? Well, I did it because I really wanted to see my friends. And you know, you're going to get some stuff that you may not like to hear. Yeah, but you did that against my wishes. You totally went against my will. Doesn't that bother you that you hurt my feelings? Now they might understand even more. It's like, oh, yeah, it does. I mean, I didn't think about it. I was stupid. Hopefully you can have this kind of conversation with your kid if you have kids, with anyone, though. And, you know, you do this pacing part. You are with each other. No one is dominating over the other. And you follow each other along. And so now you have some rapport. Even if there's contention, there's still rapport. There's still a mutual understanding of what's going on. When that happens, resistance lowers. It diminishes. When resistance lowers, you're more likely to get agreeance. You're more likely to have someone listen to you or follow a path that you lay out. Because the path that you lay out in this example might be, hey, look, I want to be able to trust you. And in order to do so, I just need you to be more honest with me. I know you're growing up and you're going to want to see your friends more and more. That's what I did. So I get it. So why don't we do this? Why don't I meet some of your friends? That way I feel better about who you're going to see. And then I'll give you the car sometimes, but you got to ask me for it. You know, something like that. And you're more likely to get willing behavior instead of reluctant behavior because you've lowered resistance by pacing their experience. And when you are on that same wavelength, and you have that rapport, then when you want to take someone down a different path, this will help you take them down a different path that would be more beneficial. You know, in the parent-child relationship, you're always trying to do things that would benefit your relationship, benefit the child, be in their highest interest, and keep them safe. So in this example, it would be, you know, I want to keep my child safe, so here's what we're going to do. I want to keep my child safe, but I also know they're at the rebellious stage. They want to do what they want to do. They don't want to listen to their parents. So I got to come up with some sort of compromise that isn't so dangerous for them, but at the same time, not so restrictive for them either. So let's do this. I'll make this compromise. And as you explain the compromise, you pace their experience and hopefully they'll go along with it and get on board. And when they get on board with that, they know that you heard them. And you know that they heard you so that you can lead them down a path that's more, like I said, beneficial or healthy. And this usually works with anyone you develop rapport with. Because I tell you what, there are times where I'll watch my type A personality girlfriend talk and talk and talk to someone without acknowledging or stopping to make sure they are digesting what she's saying. Because she does tend to talk more often than other people. So I watch her do this and I watch her talk with other people. And I'm always watching the other person's responses, their nonverbal responses. And I'll see them make all these different faces. And after she talks with them, I'll talk with my girlfriend. I was like, did you notice when you said that, she did that? It's almost like she didn't understand you. And my girlfriend would be like, well, I think she understood me without really getting the point that maybe the other person didn't understand, but maybe understood enough to get through it. So I catch my girlfriend doing this and she's gotten a lot better, but not that I'm trying to mold her into anything, but she's a great person to watch pacing and leading to see how it's not happening. Sometimes she's very good at communicating otherwise, but it's helpful to have that example. But this can work with anyone, coworkers, your boss, friends, family. I use it with my mom. If I'm talking to my mom, even on the phone, I'll say something and I'll make sure that she's following along. Because some people aren't very good at saying, oh, I didn't understand what you just said. It doesn't mean you have to slow down all communication. It doesn't mean that at all. It just means you become more present-minded. You become more aware of what's going on in the universe, of what's going on outside of you. So that when you convey information, you start to notice if it's actually being understood. Because if it's not, it gives you an opportunity to make it understood. And this type of communication, this rapport building exercise, which is what it really is, helps you in the long run because, again, you get to keep your power. You don't give it to someone else saying, they're at fault for not understanding me. And by keeping your power, you get to create more change in your life. How does that tie in? you get to create more change in your life because you're not at the whim of someone else's understanding. You're not at someone else's whim of waiting for them to understand so that you can make a move in your life. That's so important. I'm going to wait for someone else to understand me, and I'm going to continue trying to convey this message until they understand me so that I can finally make changes in my life. Some of us do that. We wait for someone else to understand us so that we can finally make the changes we want in our life. And when we do that, we end up waiting for other people indefinitely. It's like if you are married to someone or you're in a relationship with someone that you keep trying to convey the same message over and over again, and they simply don't understand it. And because they don't understand it, you can't make the changes that you want. You can't feel comfortable to be yourself. You can't be happy. And there are times where I realize you can't convey the message. They won't get it, or they refuse to understand it, because if they choose to understand what you're saying, then it might mean bad news for them. Well, if what you're saying is true, then that means you're going to go out with your friends more, and I'll be unhappy alone in the house, and I don't want you to do that. So I just don't get why you're saying it. I mean, there are times like that. That falls in line with emotional abuse. That falls in line with someone making decisions based on fear instead of love and support. But if you notice the intention behind your message is not being conveyed in the right way, you have to change how you convey it. And I didn't mention this yet, and I wanted to, at least I'm glad I thought of it now, is that with certain people, you have to change it drastically. Yes, there are people out there that won't get your message. They don't understand you. They'll never understand you. So what you need to do is realize there are people out there that don't want to understand you, first of all. And if they don't want to understand you, there's nothing you can do. Nothing. Those are the kind of people that you say, well, this is how it is, and I'm sorry if you don't like it. I mean, maybe you don't want to say it the way I would, but that's how I would say it. This is how it is. I'm sorry you don't like it. It's just how it is. You'll have to accept it. I love those words. You'll have to accept it. They'll say, I don't want to accept it. It's wrong. You made the wrong choice. I'm sorry. That's the way it is. I'm an adult. I make these choices, and so far, it's the right choice. Maybe it'll be wrong. Maybe you're right, but for now, this is the choice I made. Whether you like it or not, I'm sorry. And then they can choose to accept it or not. When they choose not to accept it, you can't pace those people. You can't pace them. You can't lead them. You can't build a rapport because they can't get past point one. They can't get past the point that you made that, and I'll use the example of your mom not accepting the person you married. Well, I'm sorry. That's the person I married. I can't get past that point. So from that point on, all communication is shot. If you wonder why you can never reconcile with some people, it's because they're still stuck at that first point. They still can't get past that first point. They will not come to an acceptance with it. Coming to an acceptance of that first point means giving up their values, giving up their beliefs, giving up what they hold true, what they hold dear. It's a lot of fear, but they don't want to give it up. It's all they got sometimes. It's all I have. I can't give that up. If I accept that you married that person, then that means this about me. Then I'm a bad person. There's a lot of depth in that. So when you pull that into the picture and realize that some people are still stuck at point one, then you have to come back to yourself and, yes, introspect and think to yourself, well, they're not past that point, so what's the point? Why bother communicating anything else about this situation, whatever situation that is, because they still can't accept point one. They will not be able to get past that. You're going to deal with people like that. And when you have people like that in your life that will not get past the first point and will not accept it and will not allow you to be and support your path, then if you want to have them in your life, you simply can't talk about that subject. And you might have to say, I'm sorry, I'm not going to talk about that subject with you because you can't accept my decisions. You might have to say something like that. Now, with other people, if they can get past that point one, yeah, I don't like it, but I accept it. I've learned that there's nothing I can do about it. You're going to make your own decisions, and I understand that. So I just have learned to accept it. Thank you so much. That means so much to me that you did that. I know it was difficult for you. I mean, this is where you come in. And you show the compassion that it was very hard for them to make that decision and let them know that you are very happy that they're in that space and you feel very supported and very loved. That is the foot in the door. That is the opportunity for you to lead this person into a better relationship in the future. Because using this example again, I married this person that my mom doesn't like, and now she's accepted that I've married this person, and I'm going to have my husband or wife drop me off one day at my mom's and say hi to my mom. I'll just make it a really short, quick visit to lead her in a new direction of connection with me and acceptance of my partner. So there's a million different scenarios that I can lay out here, but I'm just using that because it came to mind. Someone doesn't accept your decisions. Like I said, some relationships, you can't get past that point one. And some relationships, there are people in your life that don't want to accept certain things, so they refuse. And they're going to be a lot harder to pace their experience of you, because their experience of you could be all about, I want to control you. So my experience of you is all about you doing what I want you to do. When you're in that type of relationship, this pacing and leading stuff doesn't work. You have to get more drastic. And like I said earlier, sometimes you have to change your communication style so much with someone that, for example, wants to control you, that you have to communicate with them in such a drastic way that they finally get the message. And a good example of that, and I don't really have too much time to go into this, but I've talked about it before, is sometimes in order to send a message that they finally get, that they'll finally accept, it may have to involve presenting them with some sort of loss just to jostle them up. This isn't effective with everyone, because some people just don't want to ever go there. They would rather just end the relationship altogether until they get from you what they want. Those relationships may not be repairable or able to level up in some way. But when you present the idea of loss to someone, I'll just use another example. Look, if you don't want me going out with my friends, then I don't want to live like that. I don't want to live with someone who doesn't want me to enjoy myself with friends that I've known for longer than you. I'm just adding a little snarkiness there. And I need you to be okay with it. Because if you aren't, then I don't want to come home to you with you angry at me. I don't want to be in that kind of relationship. And if they say, well, that's too bad because I don't want you to go anywhere. And when you leave me, it hurts me. And they might use emotionally abusive tactics to make you feel bad, make you feel guilty. And you say, look, this is the way it is. This is what I'm going to do. If you don't like it, I'm sorry. And they might even go further and say, well, I don't want you to do that. You obviously don't care about me. Then you can say, I don't want to be with someone who can't accept the decisions that I make in my life, especially to be with my friends. I don't want to live with somebody like that. Now you're presenting loss. This is a unique scenario. I'm hoping you're generalizing it into other scenarios. But what I'm doing is presenting loss to the other person. Yes, you'll lose me if you can't learn to accept that this is my path, that these are my choices. You'll lose me. Because when that happens, when you present someone with a loss that they may have to face, they suddenly realize their priorities. And their priorities become very clear. If you are their priority in this example, they're going to be like, you're right. Totally. I'm so sorry. I'm going to get over this. I'm going to work through it. I need to heal through whatever I need to heal through. Or their priority may be totally different. What? You're not going to do what I say? I want to control you. I want you to do what I want you to do. Then you might have a different relationship there. I know I'm talking about romantic relationships, but this does generalize over a lot of things. Just like at work. Like, you've asked me to work weekends for the last 5 weekends. I'm not going to do it anymore. Well, you need to do it or you're going to get fired. What? You're going to fire me because I don't work weekends. If that's how you feel about me, then I don't want to work here. That's a scary thought because, oh my God, my job means everything to me. I need a paycheck. But what you're doing is presenting them with loss to find out what their priorities are. Because if their priority is, well, you're just here so I can use you and I don't care what your personal needs are. All I need is a body in this seat every weekend, even though you didn't sign up for that. And I'm the boss, so you should do what I say. To me, that's not in my values. I don't get respect out of that. I don't get someone treating me kindly. I look at that and say, well, then you're going to have to go empty this weekend because I refuse to be treated that way. Now I'm presenting, in this scenario, my boss with loss. And my boss goes, I don't want to lose you as an employee. Okay, okay, I'm so sorry. They're either going to realize their priorities and come to terms with it, or they're going to stay in their self-righteousness and say, well, I don't care. You're going to do what I want you to do. And then you know where you stand. I'm kind of straying off the pacing and leading part and into another area of communication, but I think it's very, very important to understand that when you just can't get through to someone with communication, when you've tried everything, when you've tried pacing, when you are doing your best to pace their experience of you and making sure they understand what you're saying and where you stand, and they just refuse to accept your values, they refuse to even respect you, you might need to go into presenting with loss so that they understand the importance, the severity of the situation, because you're going to reach threshold where you finally say, look, enough is enough. You're either going to have to accept things the way they are, or I'm just going to have to separate from this because you refuse to communicate with me in a balanced way where it's win-win. There's some power over dominating model you're putting on here, and I don't want to be a part of that. That's a lot of self-compassion right there, a lot of self-love. I want you to have a lot of self-compassion, a lot of self-love, and of course, compassion for other people. And you do that by not trying to point the finger at them and blame them for all the miscommunication. You take responsibility, and suddenly the way you communicate changes, and they feel like you're not putting them down for being stupid or misunderstanding. They feel like, wow, they really are giving me an opportunity to connect with them. I prefer that. That's my way. I hope this helps. We'll be right back. I'll say some thank yous and close the show and my final words after this. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Overwhelmed Brain. I want to thank our sponsor, GetOutOfTheMess.com. It's been a while since I've talked about them. Go to GetOutOfTheMess.com and check out the website and look at what you can get for like 25 or so bucks a month. Being able to talk to an attorney for such a low amount is just unheard of. So call Asha at 678-355-8777 and ask her if this service is right for you. And I want to thank an iTunes reviewer whose handle is NewMe_Construction. That's a great name, and they say this podcast has literally changed my negative belief system. That is so good to hear. Thank you for taking the time to review the show. I appreciate you. And thanks to anyone who's created a review for the show or the book, The Overwhelmed Brain. I appreciate all of you. That means a lot to me. I also want to thank the patron members for supporting the show over at patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. The patron site is there if you find that you're getting any value from this show, if your life is being positively affected in any way, you can show your support by going to patron.theoverwhelmedbrain.com. And showing your support also gets you access to all the private episodes and workbooks and worksheets and addendum workbooks that come with the some episodes, and also the video archive that I have over there as well. Thank you, patron members. And also thank you, Christy, for joining as a new member of the patron program. I appreciate you. And of course, thank you to anyone using the donate button or the Amazon button on the website. All of that support goes toward keeping the show alive, keeping the show growing. And even if you can't support monetarily, share the show. Send an email to your friends. Tell them to listen to a particular episode that might be of help to them. There's a lot of people that know about the show, and there's a lot of people that don't. So it's helpful to let them know it exists. And for those of you doing that, thank you. Let me tell you about the Mean Workbook real quick. I talked about emotional abuse today, so I want to let you know that at loveandabuse.com, if you find that you are in some sort of relationship that seems harder than it should be, you might be in an emotionally abusive situation. And that's what the Mean Workbook is there to assess, is to help you figure out exactly what's going on, pinpoint what's happening in your relationship to figure out if you're being emotionally abused or manipulated or something else is going on. Check it out at loveandabuse.com. And also, I'm working on the Safe Empowerment System. That stands for Social Anxiety, Freedom, and Ease. If you experience social anxiety and you would like to stop experiencing it, or at least experience it less, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm creating a product right now that is the result of my collaboration with numerous experts on social anxiety and human behavior. It's a segmented audio program broken up into what I call learning pods and mini emergency pods. And they're designed to help you dissolve or diminish your anxiety as soon as it starts. The mini pods are really short. They're meant to be listened to in small, digestible durations. So what happens is as you start to feel anxious, you play the pod. It's like a tiny mini podcast. And these short audio segments will help you to retrain your brain so that you can learn a more resourceful, healthier response other than anxiety. I look at it as your emergency anxiety toolkit. Anyway, the goal of the SAFE system is to bring you closer to feeling normal again so that you can actually enjoy yourself while you're out and about. If you have any interest in this when it comes out, go to theoverwhelmedbrain.com/SAFE. That's S-A-F-E. And as of this recording, there's still a survey there if you want to take the survey, and also a pre-order for 30% off. TheOverwhelmedBrain.com/safe. And finally, I'd like to thank Kevin McLeod of Incompetech.com for some of the music transitions in The Overwhelmed Brain. And to close the show, I just want to ask you, where else in your life can you apply pacing and leading? Where else in your life can you apply taking responsibility for communication so that you are actually taking responsibility for someone else understanding you or not? I can't tell you how helpful that is, especially if you have any plans to be a people helper, a coach, or someone whose job it is to help other people through things in any capacity, which is almost all of us in some way, shape, or form at some time in our life. Because how many times have you gotten frustrated that someone just doesn't understand you and they're not getting the point, and you get angry at them and you think they're maybe an idiot, or you think maybe they're smarter than that and why aren't they figuring this out? It all comes down to our upbringing, our conditioning, the meaning that we've given words over the years. The word dog, for example, might conjure up a picture in your mind of a four-legged furry animal, and the word dog in someone else's head, the first picture they come up with is a cool dude down the street. Hey, dog. That's probably a stretch, but you get the point. I mean, the meaning of some of the words that we've given, the meaning of some of the phrases that we are out there. I mean, if you've ever read the Tao Te Ching, you can interpret that in so many different ways. You can read one of the pages and think, oh, so that means this in my life. And then someone else will read it and they would think, well, that means this in my life. And they might not see it the same at all. That's the beauty of a book like that. But it's harder when you want to convey information to someone else and they are interpreting it in a way that has meaning to them and it comes out the wrong way, which is why pacing is important. Does what I just said make sense? And you might have to hear them explain what you just said just to make sure that they get it. I mean, like I said, you don't want to slow down all communication. So all you're doing is trying to make sure that they understand everything you said. But that's where watching body language and being very present-minded and being very observant of their responses so that you don't cause them to get lost at step one or step two and you have 14 other steps to do. Which, of course, wouldn't be a pleasant conversation. It would be more one-sided. You want to avoid one-sided conversations. I'm going to say this. One-sided conversations where you either dominate or you refuse to see their side, or you want them to do everything that you want them to do. You want to control them in some way. When it's completely one-sided, you build resentment. You build anger from the other side. You can build anger. You can build distrust. You can build lots of resistance so that future conversations don't go as well. So you may think that these few conversations that you have that you're more dominating and more controlling are just in the moment things, but what it does is it chips away at all that trust and connection and support so that the other person starts distancing themselves. I mean, this can happen. It doesn't always happen, but it can. And so, like I said, this is a very deep topic. It could go in many different directions, and there's many different variables. There are certain people that are harder to communicate with than others, and I didn't even get into cultural barriers, language barriers, all sorts of things. But, you know, I know you're smart. I know you know a lot of that stuff. But I hope I shared with you in the episode today gives you some helpful tools for your life, for your relationships. so that maybe life can go better and maybe you can start creating some positive changes where you need to create them. If you don't find your communication getting better, just keep an open mind, because that's where you can step into your power. You don't want to give your power away, so what you want to do is be firm in your decisions and actions so that you can create the life that you want. Always take steps to grow and evolve. You are powerful beyond measure. And above all, and this is something I absolutely know to be true about you are amazing.